Hey everyone, before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that you can follow Chat Cemetery on Instagram and Twitter at Chat Cemetery. There are links to those in the show notes. You can also support the show on Patreon, where I will be releasing bonus content for this show and my other podcast, Welcome to Geekdom. You can support for as little as a dollar a month to get access to all of that content. You can also rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Both are extremely helpful for the show. And now let's dive into today's episode. Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am joined once again by Katie Schaefer, and we are talking about the 2020 Stand miniseries, limited series. I'm not really sure what they're calling them these days. It is a season of TV that is 9 episodes long, and I think this might be the first time in quite some time that Katie, you and I have had differing opinions.
Yeah, usually we are like...
Or ever.
Yeah, it might be ever. Like, usually we're on the exact same page with King stuff. Like, maybe a little variation, but I was surprised by this. So I'm excited to talk about it.
I was surprised by this too, but not the good kind of surprised.
So I felt as an adaptation, it's like spot on. Like, I've listened to The Stand a few times. It omits a couple of things, some of which I was not sad to see omitted. And maybe I don't think I've ever read the original published version. I've only read the extended one.
Right. And I read the edited one, okay, which I know we discussed when we did the book episode, because you had read the longer version, I had the edited one. So I was missing some of the extra trash can man stuff, okay, and just some of the extra character stuff. But, you know, for me, I think the bouncing around was what really took me out of it. I kind of wanted a chronological telling of this.
The non-linear storytelling.
Yeah. Sometimes that works. Like, you know, it works with reading It,
mm-hmm,
and we get a little bit of that in It Chapter 2, and that works because it's kind of like flashbacks, but this was just like all over the place. I was like, okay, wait, she's pregnant. Okay, now I know where we are. Like, I had to use Franny being pregnant as my, you know, timeline, because okay, I was like, okay, she's not pregnant. She's pregnant. She's ready to have the baby, pretty much. She's not that pregnant, you know? So
yeah. It very much does go, this is a Nolan-esque storytelling. We'll go for that, because, which I like. I like nonlinear storytelling. But here's the thing, is I don't know how successful this would be for someone who hasn't read the book as many times as I have. Because like I said, I've read it, yeah, 3 or 4 times. Like, as I was watching the show, I was like, okay, this is pretty much beat for beat what happens, skimmed down for television and...
out of order.
Extremely out of order, just jumbled up and, you know, roll the dice and throw them on the table, which,
yeah,
I think that worked, because I don't know if people would have been able to, I don't know if it would have held folks' attention, because so much of what's going on is real boring in the beginning.
Fair.
So they're trying to, I think that was my assumption, is that they're trying to like stick around. See, these characters have, like, big things are happening. How are these two going to get together, you know? Because they reveal that Stu and Franny are together, like, 10, 15 minutes in.
Yeah. And, you know, to talk about the cast, I think that was my favorite part about this. I thought it was really well casted. And you have James Marsden as Stu, Odessa Young as Franny, Henry Zaga as Nick Andros, Whoopi Goldberg, always nice to see her, as Mother Abigail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably going to butcher this, but Jovan Adepo as Larry Underwood. I thought he was really great as Larry.
Perfect.
Loved Alexander Skarsgård as Randall Flagg. What they did was, you know, this version of Flagg is like the denim era. So they captured that with both, you know, Jamie Sheridan in the 94 miniseries and with Skarsgård in this one. And then you have, you know, like Matthew McConaughey's version, which is much more the Man in Black.
Yes.
Because he's in all black and, you know, looking a little better dressed, if you will, because, you know, he's in nicer clothes and not just denim.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the Man in Black. And he has, you know, he's playing a really interesting version of that character in that, which is a weird alternate Dark Tower after the end type thing. Like, oh, yeah, they really tried.
They did a little too much with that. Yes. But to, you know, dive in, even like the characters we don't see a ton of are really well cast, you know. I really enjoyed Greg Kinnear as Glenn Bateman. We do see quite a bit of him.
He was great.
Owen Teague was great as Harold, but I do have a lot of problems with Harold in particular for this, which we will dive into. Amber Heard as Nadine, Brad William Henke as Tom Cullen, which he's so big that it just like perfectly encapsulated the character. Ezra Miller was a little weird as Trash Can Man.
We don't get enough like time with that character, I think,
yeah,
to really allow Ezra Miller, because I think he is a talented actor, but a lot of times I think they rely on his big facial expressions to sell everything. And it's like, no, we need a little more. We need to understand, because we don't get any of Trash Can Man's motivations. And that sucks.
We really don't.
Because that really foretells the ending.
That part, I think, maybe felt a little more like the edited version of the book.
Okay.
Because I don't recall getting quite as much of Trash Can Man as you did reading, you know, the unabridged, uncut version, whatever you want to call it. But then, like, this cast just keeps going because you have Catherine McNamara as Julie, Fiona Dourif, you know, Brad Dourif. We love horror. We make that connection. Yeah. She is the Rat Woman. You have Ian Bailey, who was in Nightmares and Dreamscapes. He was in the episode where they're like in London and they go into this little town and like monsters attack them. I am totally blanking on the name of the episode, but you know, so we have some repeat people, of course. Hamish Linklater, J.K. Simmons, and then Bryan Cranston is uncredited as the voice of the President of the United States.
I love it. I was wondering who it was, honestly, because I, you don't get that much of it, but I was like, I know this voice. And I called J.K. Simmons four sentences in. I was like, is that J.K. Simmons? And then he said another sentence. I was like, that's J.K. Simmons. And I was...
And then you see him in one scene and then he's done.
Yep, which I thought, that's a great scene. And I think you get a lot more of that character in the book. So, but I think Simmons is able to convey all the gravitas that that character has with that little bit of screen time. So CBS chose wisely when they decided to like pay the money to have the cast in this, because like everybody fits.
And I didn't even mention everyone because there are so many people in this, but I want to quickly mention the two cameos, because Stephen King makes a less traditional cameo in this because he's in an advertisement at the bus stop.
Okay, because I was looking.
For like Hemingford Home or something. It was just so funny. It was so funny. And then you have Mick Garris, which I thought was a nice nod. He was one of the people like when they were barbecuing in the Boulder Free Zone. And he was just there and, you know, the long hair, he stood out right away. I was like, there he is. And I just thought that was a nice nod because he did, you know, the Stand miniseries in the 90s, which I have to be honest, I kind of prefer that one.
Wow. I mean, it's not, for a 90s thing, it's not bad. It's not as good as It, excepting the spider part, which is the other one that I think does really well at playing with time. I think that one does it better than this one does.
Yeah. It's hard to compare the two as well because this was three times longer than what Mick Garris did. So the 3 hour, 3 to 4 hour, whatever it was, maybe this wasn't three times as long, but it was probably at least twice as long as Mick Garris's. And
yeah,
that gave him the advantage of skipping the boring parts.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing. It does a decent, for me, it does a decent job of giving us more backstory with those boring parts and cutting out a lot of the completely unnecessary crap. Like, what was it? Like there, I don't know if this is in the I don't know if this is in the edited version, but the kid with Trash Can Man, that entire thing has been excised. And I was like, this is a good choice. I did not want to see the Trash Can Man get raped. That was terrible.
There are things that need to be left out of Stephen King adaptations at all costs. Yes. And it's like that and the It scene with Beverly.
Yeah.
those are the two things. We're just like, we don't need a visual representation of this because it's not necessary. And neither of those things really contributes to the story, if we're being honest.
It doesn't work outside of the book. And I think the trash can man scenes don't work in the book. The Beverly scenes in It, I can see an argument for, but that rape scene is like unnecessary to make us sympathize with the trash can man, and it gives us no further insight. So it just feels extra brutal, which anyway, that's the book. So the character that I thought that I genuinely was looking for in this is Lloyd Henreid, the guy who plays him, which I...
Nat Wolff.
Thank you.
I believe.
So Nat Wolff does a fine job, but all I could think is, where's Miguel Ferrer? Because I think if Miguel, who has sadly passed now, I think if Miguel Ferrer were of his age, he could definitely still have played the role that they show him, that Nat Wolff gives, you know? Like it...
The character was more annoying than I remembered. Very whiny.
Yeah, and I didn't really like that part. I was like, eh. But Lloyd is the... That's not the impression I get from Lloyd, either from the book or from Miguel Ferrer's performance. And I think his performance in the original miniseries is one of the best. Because Lloyd is an interesting character because he's dark and tortured, but also a terrible, terrible human being. So there's a lot going on there that's very interesting to dive into. But in this, he just... And they try, but...
He felt like a whiny child who needed a dad.
Yes, he's got serious daddy issues.
Yeah, and, you know, we like to talk about the positive things here, even though we can be pretty critical because there have been many not-so-great adaptations that you and I have watched, especially me having watched pretty much all of them now. Maybe one day I will revisit more Children of the Corn movies, but today is not that day.
Don't do
it. And, you know... I'm curious because we don't seem to be super far apart. Maybe our ratings will be further apart than, you know, it sounds when we're discussing this. But for me, the big turnoff was how much it jumped around. Because I was thinking about it. I was like, okay, these characters do these things in this order because I've read the book, so right. I kind of know the order of things. And they threw a wrench in that, and it was just going all over the place. But I think my biggest issue with this was how they used Harold and how much time Harold took up in comparison to the characters we actually like.
That I think I agree with. There is too much Harold.
And they made him out to be like a school shooter.
I mean, that's kind of the impression I got from the Harold in the book.
It just seemed more ramped up in this. Like, he was way more willing to take action in this than I felt like he was in the book. And, you know, he seemed very timid when we first meet him in the book. But here, it's like he's already attached to Franny from the very start, which isn't really any different from the book. But it just becomes such a focus point that you can't escape Harold. And then the whole thing with him and Nadine, and I was just like, I understand why they did that. But at the same time, I was like, okay, the whole bomb thing, you know, whatever. We need that to happen to move the plot forward.
Right.
But just how much time they spent with him when he was like, moving dead bodies and stuff. I was like, we could have used this time learning more about someone else.
Yeah, we don't need to feel sympathetic to Harold. We just don't. Like, he's not a sympathetic person at all in the book or in this. And I think it really tries to give him a sad missed redemption moment by doing that. And I agree that that's poorly used screen time just because it's like, we don't get that much of Nadine, and Nadine is a far more interesting character with a lot more nuance than Harold.
I would have loved for those scenes to be replaced with, like, more scenes of her and Joe in particular.
Yes.
Or even her and Larry, because I thought that dynamic worked much better because Joe had this attachment to the guitar. So they could have, you know, had Larry trying to give him lessons. It's not unrealistic that Larry could find another guitar because who's using them? you know, right. the music stores don't need them anymore.
Colorado is a very musician heavy. There's lots of musicians there. Okay. And in Boulder, like, come on, a college town. Like, it's ridiculous to think that there weren't thousands of guitars just chilling out there. I've got 3 guitars in my house right now, and nobody in my house plays guitar. I mean, I can a little bit, but
I have one that I just look at and pretend I can play. So I feel that. But, you know, I think because of how clearly traumatized Joe was and the fact that he knew when Nadine wasn't Nadine.
Yeah.
I would have loved more of that, because that would have not necessarily made the story more fun, because this is not a fun story by any means, but it would have gone a little deeper into what was going on with Nadine, what was going on with Joe, having him sort of confide in Larry a little more, because he does start talking.
Right, right.
We get that in the book too. And even more Kojak. I mean, give me more dog.
Definitely more Kojak. I mean, I think there's that definitely would have been a better place to spend the time on is Larry, Nadine, and Joe. And Larry gets not much time comparison to the book and in comparison to how really important he is.
And not much to do.
I would have really liked to see those beginning scenes from the book where he is extremely successful and partying and like really into the drugs and stuff. And we see that just a little bit, but it's nothing like what we get in the book. And it made me a little frustrated because it gives way more depth and perspective to his character change later. And I really would have liked to see more of Nick. Nick and Tom Cullen would have been so much more interesting, but I think they didn't, because Nick is a deaf mute. Mm-hmm. So they were like, oh, this isn't interesting. And it's like, it is though.
But even more of Tom in like Vegas
right.
would have worked, because we kind of see him here and there. You also have Dana and you have the judge who goes, and we really don't see any of the judge's journey to Vegas. It's like they know she's there and then she's dead.
Yeah, I see. So to talk about the positive things. So
you have more than I do. So please.
I was skeptical. I was like, okay, I'm going to try to go in giving it the benefit of the doubt, because I've watched a lot of really shitty Stephen King. And I think the last big long thing we watched was Under the Dome, which is oof, not good. And so I was wondering, how close is this going to stick to the book? How good is the acting and how good is the production design? All three of those for me are very close. It sticks to those things, both the good and the bad. And I think it does a pretty good job with the pacing of everything without letting things get too bogged down. You know, we don't spend whole episodes of them just riding their bikes, which we definitely would have done in Under the Dome. Definitely would have watched people riding on the highway for an entire goddamn episode. So, which they only do in the 9th one, which is where everything goes off the rails for me.
Yeah, because there is a way to make that interesting. You just have to know how to do it. And to go slightly off topic here, this is why I'm a little worried about a Long Walk adaptation. I know it's coming. I know it's in the works. Well, whether or not it's coming will be determined. Right. But we know it's been in the works for a while. And, you know, something like that, you need to have characters who are compelling, like the characters in The Body when they're walking down the railroad tracks and, you know, they're on this little journey. There's enough behind those characters to make that interesting. This show did not do the setup to make that work in episode 9, even for me.
No. And I think, like I said, for me, the nonlinear storytelling is a good way of keeping things interesting. And it does a lot of the work for them in keeping each episode moving. But
they also could have just made the episodes like 10 minutes shorter. They didn't all need to be like an hour.
That's very, very, very true. I think there is a little bit of it that's becomes too over the top.
Which works for the Vegas scenes because it's Vegas.
Perfectly. What I found that I did enjoy was like it was compelling. I could sit there and watch it and be engaged, whereas some stuff that is definitely not the case with King. So this felt like it was good enough to just like sit and watch. And like if I was looking for a skimmed down version, because the acting is so goddamn phenomenal, like Skarsgård, Alexander Skarsgård is just perfection in this. And I really honestly was looking. McConaughey was in talks originally to play this character, but then the Dark Tower happened and then
nobody wanted that.
Nope. Yeah, shit went down. And like I think McConaughey would have done a fantastic job in this if he hadn't played the Man in Black in the Dark Tower. Like if the Dark Tower movie had just never happened, McConaughey would have been really good in this. But Skarsgård encompasses all of that southern good old boy attitude with a lot more intensity.
The other thing that I'm just now remembering that was super weird was the whole scene with him where he's like interacting with these people who clearly aren't like with the rest of civilization. And then he's just suddenly naked. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, that was one thing I was like, I don't think we needed this. As far as, you know, the Randall Flagg scenes go, everything else I thought made sense. And then I was like,
he's got his boots on.
Okay.
Because
he does have his boots on. That's it.
That makes sense somehow. I mean, and that is at the end of the novel, but I was just like, oh god. I mean, you know, to me I was like, hey, look at that sexy butt. That's a nice sexy butt right there. That's a hot guy looking good. And that works.
The rest of it was just so confusing.
Yes, I agree. The special effects in this are the other thing that I thought were pretty well done, especially considering it's a mini series, limited series. Whatever. Mm-hmm. I think they saved their money for the right points in this, and that was a relief.
Yeah, destroying Vegas looked good.
Yes, exactly. And there's not a whole lot of cause for special effects other than Captain Trips.
There were a few things that didn't work in that. Some of the like lightning, you know, like the electrical stuff, I was like, no, that's not working for me. But the rest, like the explosions.
When the lightning goes through people and causes them to explode, it feels very Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry to interrupt you, though. Carry on.
But I think they really managed to spend their budget wisely. And I think there was at least some practical effects with the Captain Trips, which I did not like how they portrayed the Captain Trips. That was like, I don't know what I expected, but it wasn't that. It wasn't weird frog people who make sloshy noises.
Yeah, I'd have to go revisit the comic book and see how they did that.
And maybe that's accurate to the book, and I just kind of blocked that part out because it's gross. But, and it works.
Yeah. I never really thought about it either because I don't remember it being that way in the miniseries at all. I think people were just kind of dead because they probably didn't have the budget for that at that time.
Exactly.
It reminded me of Thinner.
I can see that.
When he like keeps eating the pie and then he has like fortunes.
Yes. Oh, God. Yes.
You're welcome, everyone, for that visual.
Yeah. I think a lot of it was done with practical effects, which is a huge improvement because I think it would really have been terrible if they'd solely done CGI. But I think there was more CGI than probably there should have been. It should have been a lot more practical. So I had respect for that. I think, you know, I expected there to be 8 episodes of this. And after the end of the 8th episode, I was like, all right. I mean, we didn't quite get to the whole thing, but I'm okay with that. That's fine. Like, it was good.
It felt like a better ending than the 9th episode was. Yep. And I was telling you, I was like, oh, I didn't take notes for the last episode. And it's probably because I didn't have anything to say, really.
Yeah. And then the 9th episode happened and I was like, oh. Because I think the 8th episode was like 50 minutes or 40 minutes or something, 45.
Yeah, to be fair, they weren't all an hour, but like episode 8 just goes out on such a high note. You have Lloyd killing Glenn in court. For anyone listening, I just did air quotes because right. It was not real court by any means. Right. And Nadine jumps out the window. You have a trash can man coming in with like
a nuclear warhead.
Yes.
That's what it is.
And the radiation has got into him, and his skin looks disgusting. And just that visual element, aside from, like we said, the electrical and the lightning stuff happening in the hotel and everything, Tom comes across Kojak, and, you know, the dog's fine. We love that.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, we do.
And then Joe knows when the dark man is gone. That was your cue. Just end it there. The dark man is gone.
Yep. We don't need to stick with the original ending. And then it goes into the next episode. So of course, I streamed this on Paramount Plus. And I was like, there's a ninth episode? And it's taffy stretched out, like, to a painful level of, like, why are we seeing so much of Franny and Stu on the road? We didn't see this much of them on the road when they were traveling to Boulder. Like, in the book, the traveling to Boulder takes half the book, for Christ's sake. And then that last little end bit is a couple of pages. Or not a couple of pages, but, like, the traveling part of it takes up so little. And it felt like... And I don't remember the part with Franny being tempted in the book. Do you?
Look, I've read a lot of the books since reading The Stand.
I'm going to look because...
Because The Stand is what, book five?
Yeah, it's pretty...
Out of, like, however many I've read now, 70 or something like that. True. So, unfortunately, I haven't had the chance to go back and read the full version of it. So, for me, I was like, okay, I remembered the big plot points.
Okay.
Just from, you know, reading the edited version of the book, watching the 90s miniseries, and I have read two of the five or six comic book trades that adapt The Stand, which those do a really amazing job. Going to recommend those for anyone who hasn't checked those out yet. But, you know, so I was like, okay, we start with Captain Trips. We have all of these people in all of these different areas. You know, you have Franny and Harold in Maine. You have Larry and Rita in New York. You have, you know, Stu coming from wherever he's coming from, and you have this whole journey. You have, you know, Hemmingford home, you have Boulder, and you have Vegas, and you have these big plot points and, like, stopping points on the way to these places that made it so I was kind of hoping we'd get more of the traveling, honestly. I understand why we didn't, but I feel like Larry getting from New York and then all of a sudden being in Boulder, pretty much, I was like...
Yeah, it kind of... Like, there's not enough Larry in this, and it's very frustrating.
There's not enough Larry, there's not enough Kojak.
No, definitely. And no, so I checked. Franny being tested is not in the book. That, and that complete and uncut edition is the only instance where Flag wakes up with memory loss on the beach. And we see that little bit. That is only in the uncut edition. But no, the book ends when they move to Maine with that final Maine scene. But all the stuff that happens in Nebraska does not take place in the book. And I get the temptation to do it because they were pretty unclear in...
They needed another field of corn.
That's true. It's unclear during the showdown in Vegas when he just blinks out whether or not he's just exploded or if he's blinked away. So I can see how they didn't necessarily want to do that. You know, him landing on the island or whatever, just blank. But it's just so unnecessary. Franny has already proved herself. We don't need to see her again. Reject the devil and then be miraculously cured by child mother Abigail. Like, it just...
What they should have done is they should have ended it with Stu and Franny saying goodbye to everyone and driving off into the sunset.
Yes, exactly. That would have been perfect. Like, and then you could have done the last episode, hour and 10 minutes. You would have been fine. You would have had that happy ending moment.
Yeah.
They chose to just kind of arbitrarily stretch it out. Was just frustrating. I was like, oh my god, why are we doing this? Like,
right,
what more conflict? Because I remembered the end of the book. I thought, what more conflict is there? What happens on the road to Maine? Like, why are we seeing them go on the road?
Yeah.
So
Did we need a flat tire? No, we did not.
Yes. And I mean, it was a good and interesting scene, but it felt unnecessary and at that point tedious. Because it's like, I don't need one last test for Franny. I don't need that. So that was where the series really just nosedive, which it's crazy to think that the show ending was worse than the book ending.
Yeah. And I kind of want to talk about this a little because this is a 2020 series. So we're very, very close to being caught up now. I am very close to being caught up now. As far as the episodes go, I am like actually caught up with watching and reading right now, which has been great. But it seems like when it comes to Stephen King's long, and I mean long novels, so, you know, the uncut version of The Stand, It, 11/22/63, Under the Dome, we saw how Under the Dome went off the rails. And it seems like a lot of these longer books, they don't know what to do with them when they go to adapt them, which is why for me, I like Mick Garris's version better because it's consolidated. It still hits all of those big plot points. And, you know, yeah, sure, a boom mic pops up in a shot.
More than once,
you
yes.
Know? You know, you see the budget with that one. But it has this sort of charm to it that I never felt like this one had. And, you know, with It, we have the miniseries and we have the two movies. The two movies end up being longer than the miniseries. But at the same time, there's still so much you could do because of how much people love those kids that for me, it's like, okay, why isn't It getting the, you know, 8-episode series treatment? Why is it Lisey's story? And not that I have problems with, you know, watching 8 episodes of Lisey's story. We already did that.
Yeah, and it was good.
You know, it's just one of those things where sometimes the longer books get the weirdest adaptation treatments. And look, I love the It movies. Don't get me wrong. Like, I adore the first one. The second one has its problems, yeah. But I still really enjoy watching it. 11/22/63 makes some big changes from the book.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, there's like a character who's just like not in the book at all and is like a huge part in the miniseries.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Or in the limited series. And it just seems like with the longer books, there's really this struggle of figuring out what suits it best. And like It, to me, is like the perfect 8-to-10-episode series because you could do like an episode of the kids, an episode of the adults, an episode of the kids, or just split the episodes in half, you know, half kids, half adults each episode. And then you get the back and forth that way. But yeah, that's just my little rant for today.
I mean, I think there's advantages to doing truncated versions of stories like It and stretching it out like they do here. And I too would love to see the It movies be a mini series, being something like this, because I think it would have been amazing. Because I think the downfall in that is they try to do too much in too little time.
Yeah, because the first movie is all the kids, and then the second movie they're doing the back and forth thing. And it's like, okay, they seem to be unclear on whether or not they were going to get a second movie at all.
They just told
like the kids' part of the story. And, you know, with the kids aging and everything, like that happened too. But yeah, I think that's kind of why this just didn't click with me. And I was bummed because I was like actually getting bored while watching this and tired. And I don't know if it's because I was doing too much at the time, because I was like plowing through the rest of the King stuff, but I was just like, this is the last thing, pretty much. Because I think I actually watched this after having finished Chapelwaite, which is the most recent adaptation. And, you know, I went a little out of order. And with this, I was just like, oh boy, because I had heard bad things about it.
Right.
So going into it. And I was like, okay, the cast, I really like the cast. I do.
Yeah, James Marsden is perfect as Stu.
Yeah, and I really liked Franny. I, you know, it was just too much Harold, not enough Larry. mm-hmm. you know, could have used some more Nadine. And it wasn't as campy as the miniseries was. And I think you needed a little bit more of that campiness. You get it with Flag, I think, the most. Yes. And then everyone else is just like,
very serious.
Super serious.
We're super serial right now. I think the thing that they try to do in this that I was it definitely was a mixed bag for me, is they do try to make it of the time that it's being released. And the craziest part about this is that this film was made, or this series was finished, ready to go before the pandemic, and then was released during,
right in the middle of it.
right in the middle of the pandemic. And it's, and like those first couple episodes, I'm like, I can see why this maybe didn't do so well, because nobody wants to fucking watch this when it's literally happening, you know. Not to that extent, obviously, because it was not a 98% death rate, but it certainly affected my viewing of it. And the fact that there are a couple of moments that they bring up, like in the most one of the most horrible scenes, with where Franny and Harold get stopped by that guy in the truck, and he's got his quote unquote harem of women or whatever. That guy talks about Harold being a cuck and all of this stuff, and I was like, okay. So it sets itself in the time frame of like, okay, so, because, and Harold certainly has a lot of incel-y
vibes.
Yes, thank you. Vibes. Lots of incel vibes with Harold. So, and I think they did it a decent amount, because the original book is very much of its time in how it,
as many King books are, itself. To be fair.
Right. Which is good, generally. I like a book that just owns itself. This is where it's at. But I think, and I don't mind that it does that in this, but because it is supposed to be set in the time just before our actual pandemic, it feels a little too real at certain points.
Yes.
I can definitely see why, you know, there'd be a significant contingent of people who would have usually watched this and enjoyed it, who watch it and are like,
It was just such unfortunate timing, because, you know, King didn't plan it that way. The people adapting it didn't plan it that way. None of them could have predicted this, except for The Simpsons, probably. But, you know, it's just one of those things where The Stand is such an ambitious book. And because it came so early on in King's career, you know, it was, like I said, the fifth book, I think, that got published. And that's, you know, including Night Shift, which is technically a collection. So really, it's like the fourth novel published, and it is a behemoth. And this is just such a massive task to take on that, you know, it makes me wonder what the Amazon Dark Tower series could have been like, because I want more of Randall Flagg. For me, he's one of my favorite King villains because he's been around so long. And, you know, I think there's a Eyes of the Dragon adaptation in the works too.
Ooh, that'll be, well, that could be TBD. Fun. That could be.
We're fun. TBD on all of these things.
And you know what? I would love to see like a real dedicated version of the Dark Tower series brought to streaming. Like the Wheel of Time series is premiering in a couple of weeks from when we're recording this. And I think if that's successful, we might get more energy put into a Dark Tower series, because it'll be the second of these. And the Wheel of Time is 14 books long, not 6 question mark that Game of Thrones is. So if they're able to go out and continue and make the whole thing and have it work, I could definitely see Sony, who I believe owns the rights to the Dark Tower right now, wanting to invest the money in making something like that. And that's a story that you can spread out. I'm hopeful that we'll continue to see more of these, because even though, you know, you weren't a big fan and I enjoyed watching it.
You were a moderate fan.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching it, but that doesn't mean I liked all the choices they made, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
not revisit this.
I feel like I'll revisit it just to watch Alexander Skarsgård. Like, he's just so...
But that means you could skip like half of the episodes.
Yes, that'd be fine too. I'd pick and choose because it's like, oh, which part of the Stand book do I want to watch? And I'll never rewatch the last episode. Episode 8, I might rewatch that like with my husband just to be like, look at this crazy awesome shit, because he wasn't able to watch it with me. But episode 9, I'm like, And then they lived happily ever after in Boulder and it's fine. We go forward. So... Yeah, it's not as good as it could be, but it's not bad. It's not like, as long as you can deal with the non-linear storytelling.
Which I clearly could not. I was like, can she just like be pregnant for one, you know, section of this?
A whole episode. Like, you know what we need is we need a fan edit that...
puts it back in order.
reorders it, because I would be fascinated to watch that. Like...
Don't tempt me.
That sounds so interesting, watching a fan edit of like, okay, now here's all of the parts in consecutive order, because it would tell me whether or not like, well, did the fact that this was done in a nonlinear fashion make it more interesting to me? Or is it actually a decent adaptation? Because I could see either one of those things being true, honestly.
Yeah. And to kind of end this on a little bit of a positive note before I actually give my rating. Actually, no, I'll give my rating. I gave it a 1.5 out of 5. I did not have a fun time with this, but it looked good.
Beautiful. It was very well shot.
It looked really nice. The cast, all nice to look at, you know?
Yeah, the cinematography is fantastic. Like
Whoopi being Whoopi, what could you not like about her? And, you know, we needed more of her too.
Yeah.
Because she just straight up disappeared. At one point, and you're like, okay, bye.
Yes. And we do get a little bit of what she was doing when she was gone, but I wanted more of just her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because there's a couple scenes in the book of her talking about, like, of just her in the beginning before anybody comes. And that would have been more humanizing to see, like, who this woman is beyond magical godmouth, which is very much. In this, she's way more magical Negro trope than she is in the book, which is really fucking saying something.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So yeah, more Larry, more Mother Abigail, more Joe, more Kojak, because who doesn't like a golden retriever?
And honestly, Glenn. Glenn is fascinating. And
well, yeah, I mean, more Kojak kind of implies more Glenn, since Kojak is Glenn's dog, but... I clearly have my priorities straight and I want more of the dog, but you know.
I would say I would give this 3. Yeah, that sounds about right. 3.
This is definitely as far off as we've been, I know. Which isn't that far off, really.
I but I think there's a lot to enjoy about it, especially with the acting. And I will say that the writing in this is really good. Like the teleplay writing. You know, maybe not the editing as much, but I think like this was written mostly by Jill Killington, but also Owen King wrote 3 episodes. I think the writers do a really good job without making the dialogue feel cheesy. And I would be absolutely remiss if I didn't acknowledge how well they handled Baby, Can You Dig Your Man? Because we do not hear Baby, Can You Dig Your Man until episode 8. They play the music, but we never hear Larry singing it until the very end, until what should have been the very end of the show. And I thought that was good, because I've listened to the audiobook, so I've heard how it's interpreted in that, which is a much more 70s scat vibe than what they do in this. But I've always kind of wondered, like, how are you going to make that? How is that a catchy song?
Yeah.
How is that a catchy song?
On the note of, you know, who wrote and worked on these episodes, I do want to point out that Vincenzo Natali directed 7 and 8.
Oh.
And I think those two were probably, like, the high points for me personally. And you've already said how much you liked episode 8. And, you know, he did In the Tall Grass, which not... a favorite adaptation of mine.
But it's such a good horror movie.
But it's bonkers.
Oh.
It's wild.
It's, yeah, yeah, it's upsetting. It's.
I spent some time being confused during that one, admittedly.
I did too, but then by the end, you're just, hand over your mouth horrified about it because of the places it goes. So that makes sense because that's a difficult story to get right. And it also does a lot of nonlinear storytelling.
Another one I didn't love. So, you know, you and I might differ on that one as well. But I did that episode with someone else. So I guess we won't find out today. But Katie, thank you so much for joining me to talk about the 2020 Stand series, limited series, mini series, whatever you want to call it. 9 episodes. We're going to pretend it's 8.
Exactly. That 9th episode, folks, you can probably watch a YouTube clip and it'll explain. You'll get to see the happy bits.
Just watch the preview for the episode or something.
Yeah. I mean, it's unnecessary. Episode 8 is the climax of the show. And then it's like a really unnecessarily long afterword is episode 40, a 48 minute afterword.
It's like when King does an epilogue and you're like, no, sir, you did not need that.
Yeah, I didn't need this. You could have actually just let me wonder because I wasn't wondering. I was just I was satisfied. And now you kept going.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I'm glad I watched it. And I think if you really like the book, it's worth watching.
Yeah, I would say decide for yourself on this one. I tried to not let the negative reviews cloud my judgment going into it, but then I just found myself being bored and I was like, okay, I want more of all these characters that they're not giving me more of.
Yeah, I agree because I think the saddest one for me is Trash Can Man because he's such a huge player at the end of it, like as in he makes big change. Mm-hmm.
And you know what? We didn't even talk about Harold that much for how much he is in this.
No, he's not interesting. He's just an incel loser.
And a lot of what he does not drive the plot forward either.
No, I mean, I think we get more Harold than we do Franny. And that's frustrating because she's ostensibly like the main character of the book. If you had to pick a main character of a book that has like 17 main characters, Franny is the one who drives through the entire thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
agreed.
She doesn't get nearly as much. Like we don't even know anything about her mom. Like her mom doesn't even make an appearance in this, and she's a huge impact on Franny in the book. So it felt like they focused a little too much on things that maybe they should have just let go.
It really felt like they were like, okay, we revealed she's pregnant. Now she has no use.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And that's unfortunate. We'll put it that way to be nice. It's unfortunate.
To be nice, yes. That is a good way to put it. But Katie, thank you again.
Yes, thank you.